now being recorded. So, yeah. Hi, welcome to another edition of That Millwall Podcast. Last week's episode got us thinking, and Joe said, oh, I've got a couple of pals who'll be able to help with this. So, we've gone out on a limb. And we're going to talk to a Norwich fan. Don't panic. I've checked his fingers. They're all there. And we're going to talk to a Brighton and Hove fan about what their views are, what they've seen, how both clubs got in to the Premiership. Obviously, Norwich a bit more unsteady, shall we say, than Brighton. But Joe convinced me that this would be a good idea to listen to how they do it and basically get an understanding of what sort of investment is needed and whatnot for potentially us to get to the Prem. So without further ado, I am joined by the one and only Mr. Zamba. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Mickey. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm all right, mate. I'm all right, yeah. There was a good show last week, so hopefully this time we'll go a bit more deeper into it and find out what it takes, so yeah.
Well, that's it. I'm looking forward to this one. It'd be quite good to get a different opinion from outside Millwall looking in and just seeing how other clubs operate and what their ethos is and their modules and how it works. And hopefully, you know, we might be able to take note of that and adopt a few of these methods, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. So then, without further ado, let's welcome Kev, who is the Brighton and Hove fan. How you doing, fella? You all right?
I'm very well, thanks, Mickey. Thanks for having us on. Can't believe my first ever podcast is a Millwall-related one rather than a Brighton one, but there you go.
You never know. You might get picked up by the Brighton one now. But there's a Brighton story in a minute. I'll tell you a Brighton story in a minute, which is quite funny. So yeah, and I'm joined by Steve, who's a Norwich City fan. Can you just hold your fingers up so we know that?
Just to prove, no webbing anywhere. Honestly, I was born there, not bred. If it helps. So thanks for having me on.
So your sister lives outside the borough, is that what you're telling us?
That's it, yeah, totally different, yeah. No, it's good you to have me.
No, it's a pleasure, So hopefully the next 45 minutes, an hour, or 30 minutes, or however long it takes, will hopefully be quite an interesting insight into what we do. So, yeah, the story what I was going to say to you, Kev, was the time at Brighton got us an accusation of Millwall fans being racist across the Sun. And then we got an apology from the Sun when you boys come to town and you boys shouting seagulls made a journalist for the Sun thought we were saying seek how. And it wasn't until he listened back to the tapes and realised that actually what was being shouted was seagulls. But that was after he'd written a centre part in the Sun of how racist Millwall fans were for shouting Sieg Heil, when actually if he'd have listened a bit clearer or sat closer to the North Stand, he would have heard that it was seagulls.
That's the problem, isn't it? When you get a reputation like Millwall have, which not, and in all fairness, I'm not saying you still have that reputation, but obviously back in the day, the stigma was there, and it just gets attached, doesn't it? And journalists just sort of assume things, make things up.
This was only about what, 10, 15 years ago, in fact. So, yeah, it was quite surprising. Right, we're going to crack in. We're going to end here. We're going to give you a quick ad break, and then we'll be back straight after this, and we will get on with it. You all right, boys, yeah?
Yep, so good. Yeah.
Welcome back, then, part one. We flipped a coin earlier, and we're going to go with a Brighton fan to start with. Kev, what did Brighton do to change their fortune? And do you think now that possibly they will be, whether a bottom end, but there will be a Premiership team for a while longer?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a bit of context around Brighton, which is probably well documented, as most people know. The club were, back in the late 90s, we were without a stadium. We had to move to Gillingham and ground share there, which was horrible, to say the least. Gillingham, I don't even know the Priestfield Stadium. It's not a place you want to go to every other weekend. And it was dire. We were on the brink of going out of the league just prior to that. Managed to get a draw at Hereford on the last day. So really, the recent history of Brighton, 25 years or whatever it's been, the change within that has been absolutely remarkable, which I guess it makes it right for a programme later, or more to the point, a question like you just asked. So obviously we got ourselves, we stayed up in the league. We then got ourselves a more stable standing, and we brought in the new owner was Dick Knight, who is an absolute legend as far as Brighton fans are concerned. A guy with a club close to his heart. He got rid of the previous incumbents who were, again, this will be known to lots of people, but David Bellotti and Bill Archer, who really did drag the club down, sold the ground, which, you know, without a stadium to go to was unforgivable. So really where it started was Dick Knight. And I guess that's fundamentally where you do begin. You start with a guy who is a local businessman with his heart in, you know, he's a fan of the club. And he was the one really that kick-started everything. He kick-started the move back from Gillingham to the Withdean Stadium, which was the athletics track just outside of Brighton. Only a 6,500 capacity, but it was a home. It was a game that we could go to and not have to do the 100-mile round trip to Kent. So that was fantastic. And then just things, all the right things seemed to happen. We got the right managers in. We got Mickey Adams came in and got us promotion. Peter Taylor was there for a while. Even Steve Coppell, dare I say, ex-Palace boss, was there and did a decent job, if I'm honest. So really things started
to move
on.
He's been here too.
Yeah, Coppell, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Was here too with Harris. It was Harris's go-to man for many years.
Yeah, yeah. I think the guy's fantastic. I think it's a shame that you know, he's probably not still in management now. But so really we kicked on from that. And then really things started to snowball when Knight wanted to step down, or more to the point, take a back seat. He's not a young guy. I believe he's probably into his mid-80s now. And that's where Tony Bloom came in. And this is really where it really just snowballs. So Tony Bloom, for those who don't know, is a guy who made most of his... Well, he made money out of playing poker, I believe, not professionally, and then started to invest that in property. But his family have been sort of there or thereabouts connected to the club for several years. In fact, his uncle, Ray Bloom, I think, was on the board back in the 70s. So again, it's blue and white blood flowing through his veins there. And that really is what you need. You need, I believe, having seen all this, you just need that person, not necessarily that is a fan, a long-term fan of the club, but just someone who understands the fabric of the club and the community. I mean, we've seen this with the Leicester situation, where, of course, they won the Premier League, that the Thai owners in. Okay, they're from Thailand. Everyone's thinking they're just in it for the money. But they understood the club. They understood. They connected to the community. Obviously, tragic what happened to their owner. But, you know, they won the Premier League and they, you know, you could see the outpouring of grief when he died. So again, it's just getting those people in that care about the club, not these rich Americans who have no idea what they're doing. I mean, look at United and Glazier, and they're, you know, they can't stand the guy. I know
this
comes
from Kev.
The US.
Yeah. But luckily this one does care about us though, which is quite good. He's been
with us. Well, that's the thing. It doesn't matter where they're from. It's just as long as they care about the club.
I'm joking. So, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tony Bloom has come in. And obviously he's wealthy. He's got a lot of money. Lost you guys on the phone. Oh, you're in now. Do I just keep talking through that sort of thing, Mickey? Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. So,
just you all disappeared. So he's come in and the money he's invested has been fantastic. Obviously, people will say, well, it's got to be the new stadium that he's built. But it's actually the youth development system. And that's the core of the success. He's created a fantastic state-of-the-art training academy out near Shoreham, which Mickey, I'm sure, as you all know, is just west of Brighton. And the academy has really kicked on. We produced great players that have gone on to play in the Premier League. You know, we had obviously Lewis Dunk and Solly March currently. Most recently, Robert Sanchez, who's now the number two goalkeeper in Spain. Steve Cook went on to play in the Premier League. Tommy Elphick. These are all players that came through that academy. And continue to do so. So for me, to answer your question, Mickey, that's where it starts. It starts with the chairman whose heart's in the right place and then just the investment in the youth. And if you can get those two things right, and when I say investment in the youth, I mean you've really got to invest. Obviously, we've been lucky. Tony Bloom has a lot of money. He was able to create this centre and obviously from there, build the Amex. But just the guy with the heart in the right place and the understanding of and the importance of youth development, for me, that's where the main success, I think, came from for Brighton.
How much do you think so far it's costing with investment?
Sure. In total, 250 million just to get us to the Premier League. So he had... But that, and that obviously in the
stadium as well, though, Kev.
Yeah. So that's stadium, that's the training facility, and then just right. getting the right people in. The Dean Ashworths of this world, or Paul. I've got a special shout out to Paul Barber as well, the chief exec, who obviously
so,
was.
So not much, then. Not a lot.
No, exactly. This is it. This is the thing. It is a lot of money. I'm not going to beat around.
So when what year did this actually start? In regards to, when Brighton got promoted from the Championship to the Premiership, but how much before that did all this money inject into the club to get them to that level? How soon did it happen?
2009 was when Bloom took over.
Really? So the development started from there, from 2009, regards to training facilities.
I think like any club, the development program was already there. As any club would, you'd be daft not to have a development system in place. But I think almost from day one, he understood the need to create an academy that would start to just produce decent players. Yeah. And that was just the makings of it, really, the foundation of it. He wasn't in there to say, right, we're going to sign this ex-Premier League player on big wages and that. We've seen that happen before with teams where they've signed, big players on big contracts and who are towards the end of their career. It just doesn't work. So he went the other way.
Can I just ask, sorry, Kev, so 2009, were you in the Championship, the second tier at the time, was you?
We were in the third tier. And he basically recruited. Hang on, let me get this right. So, yeah, at the time we would have had, I think it was probably Russell Slade or someone like that was in charge. But soon after we got promotion into the Championship, and that's when he made Gus Poyet manager.
Right. Okay.
And Gus Poyet.
That was the turning point, wasn't it? I guess that was the turning
point. It was. I talk about, your youth academy, but it's also getting the right person in charge in. And we had a succession of really good managers. Gus Poyet was, I know he's, probably not managing at the highest level now, but when he came in, he played a brand of football, which was nothing like we'd seen before. It was passing football. And I think in the Championship, when you're trying to get at the Premier League, you can pass your way through a game. It's not about just hoof it over the pitch and just long range shots. It's just passing. So our possession stats were always 70-30 in most of the games. But you've got to back that up with decent players, and a great holding midfielder in Dale Stevens. And obviously we have Bobby Zamora. You just need those players that get you through that. But I think getting the right manager in place as well. I mean, there's a whole bunch of ingredients, but not to want to blow Brighton's trumpet, but there's an awful lot they were getting right at that point. Which is why effectively we went from third tier to Premier League, I think, in a space of about eight years, I think it was.
I mean, when you think about us, really, I mean, John Brereton took over 2007. I think roughly to probably right now, he's probably put best part of 100 million into the club. And probably not including all the legal fees and everything else, maybe with regen and other battles and whatnot's gone on. But now we are looking to spend a big chunk or sponsorship or whichever way we do it. But we are in the process now of looking to build a brand new state-of-the-art to a Championship club training facility. So we've now got a director of football who is a Millwall fan, started as a journalist and come up through the ranks as such, got into recruitment within us, then went to Stoke and then come back. And hopefully now he's got control of the recruitment and the director of football role. And hopefully with that, and he's going to be overseeing the academy side of it, I think possibly maybe in another 10, 15 years' time, we might well be, looking at the Premiership if we're not already there through, you know, through our playing ability on the floor. But I think that training facility will cement our future with getting the, you know, the good kids. Because I think it's not too bad for Brighton, and we'll come to you, Steve, in a minute, just so we can get your story and then we can start a general conversation, is that I think where Brighton is, there isn't many other Premiership or clubs of your level really within your area. You've got Bournemouth sort of west of you, but there isn't really anything apart from Gillingham to a degree that is a professional club really where you are. As in, what we've got is we've got all the big boys within London. So the Spurs, the Arsenal, the, you know, we've got obviously Sutton United, Wimbledon, we've got Gillingham, Charlton, et cetera, et cetera. So I think for us finding the youngsters with the current setup we've got is potentially hard because our ground or our training facility is very dated. As in, they walk into yours and you walk them into the Amex, which is obviously a sponsored stadium from American Express, which is great. But your training facility is probably going to be the same sort of level and, you know, Premiership level training facilities. You suddenly walk in there with a boy and his dad, the boy's eyes are going to go, whoa, look at this. You walk him into ours in the middle of Bromley and we've got porter cabins everywhere and you're just going to be, dad, I've been offered a thing at, you know, at Tottenham.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mickey. I mean, you know, it goes without saying, you can't compete if your facilities aren't up to scratch and you're trying to impress someone who's looking at the club for the first time or visiting the club for the first time. First impressions last. So no, you are absolutely right. And yeah, as I said, it underlines the point. If you get that right, and you create that academy that's got that wow factor as well, maybe a bit of wow factor to it, then yes, you are going to attract players, especially as you say quite rightly, you're up against, you know, dare I say it, the Crystal Palaces and the Charms of the world, that you know, you've got to compete.
No, that's it. So, Steve, what's same question really? What I said to Kev is, what level of investment do you think was there, and where do you see things started to change and going forward? I mean, you're not fully there in the same way that I would class Brighton as, because you've been a bit of a yo-yo. But you are in the right direction, I suppose.
We're trying. Which we, you know, Stuart Webber's ambition is to be a top 26 club, as he says, is to have that stability. You know, if we're either pushing for promotion or we're in the Premier League, it's very difficult because we don't necessarily have the same financial clout. We don't. I mean, you know, I love Delia and Michael Wynne-Jones. They've done so much for the club. They're millionaires in a billionaire's world, right? You know, you look at the Premier League, you look at all the owners there, they're all billionaires. You know, I think we were 19th or 20th richest owners in the Premier League last, or the season we've just had. And it's a reoccurring theme every time we're there. We are effectively poor. And you know, we're trying to be sustainable. I think that's the way that Norwich is trying to do it, to make it work. Our money isn't pumped into the club, it's organically grown. So again, it's come down to clever recruitment and having really the policy of the youth. I mean, we got our Cat 1 status for our youth team in 2012, and that was huge for us, right? That was something that we really wanted to do. I mean, Delia and Michael have been involved in the club for 20-25 years, and it's taken, well, they took it on in 1997. They always wanted to kind of push the club forward, but it wasn't really until, you know, as I say, 2012 that we actually managed to get that status. And that was already after two stints in the top flight, which wow. You know, failed to materialise and or keep us in there for longevity. And we've come back down, and the only way we can get back up is by making the smart choices at youth level, bringing them through and trying to treat them as an investment. And it's kicked on since Stuart Webber took over in 2017. I think one of the biggest problems that we had from 2012 to 2017 is we had good youth prospects coming through, but we didn't have a manager who had the guts and the balls to actually blood them and play them. So we had all these kind of players with potential that ended up going nowhere. But Weber came on, he brought Farke on board, and Farke knew what the model was. He was on board with that. He'd already had practice in blooding youngsters, and he was happy to do so again. He was able to manage them effectively, and it's really then that we started to see everything that we wanted and everything we talked about as a club starting to happen. And suddenly all these prospects that we'd been garnering and bringing through, we started actually making money on. I mean, one of the things Norwich had always been terrible at is selling cheaply, like potential talent. And as a fan base, we've constantly been frustrated at like never getting the value of what we felt we should have for decent players. That kind of stopped and changed with Weber. And for whatever people talk about his recruitment, and you know, there's two sides to the coin, isn't there? There's those coming into the club and those going out. He's been brilliant at getting value out of assets that are outgoing from the club. Those coming inwards, it's a bit of a lottery, isn't it? So I think it's always been about trying to push forward, reinvest, and then push forward again. And it's slowly trying to build yourself up the chain. And it's much more difficult if you don't have 100, 150 million that can be injected into the assets of the club or into the team, into pushing it there. It feels like the forever game, isn't it? Where you're trying to build it up. And if you make some bad signings, you're going down again. And then you're trying to claw back up again. And you're all kind of, can you get there? No, okay. And then you're trying to do it again. And that's been why we end up as a yo-yo club at the moment, because we're struggling to actually get that team that's strong enough when we actually get to the Premier League. I mean, this last run at it, we actually spent some money because two seasons before that, we were accused of not spending money, not having a go. But when we went up that time, all the money went into the investment into the club, like Millwall's doing now. They're investing in their youth setup. They're getting it right. And you're absolutely right, Mickey. 10 years is probably where you're going to see dividends from that. It's
interesting what you say about, you know, 2012 when you got the cap one, and what you're aiming towards. I mean that's for Millwall, that'd be absolutely brilliant. And we spoke about some previous shows. We need to improve and our youth facilities and our academy, build that up. But we also don't know. We're not very good on the resale value of our players. This has been the case for years and years. And you know, it's interesting to say that Norwich were very similar to how Millwall have been, how we are now. But that has changed, isn't it, in recent years with Norwich? I mean, I've seen a lot of players go now for big money, for good money. I mean, James Maddison's one that's left, and you've got the Murphy twins. And is there any others?
I can't remember. Yeah, I mean, Ben Godfrey went to Everton for 25 Everton. Million. Obviously, last season we sold Buendia for 35 million. To Aston Villa. I mean, there is Jamal Lewis.
How much did James Maddison go for?
22.5 million for him.
But just out of curiosity, what was the fans' feeling? I mean, it's never great and never nice to sell your best players. I mean, I know how we would feel if we kept selling our best players. But when you're getting that kind of revenue in and you see how the club is run, how they're reinvesting that money in the right way, is there kind of 50-50 kind of mixed bag in the feelings of the fans? Or are they all for it? Yeah. Are they against it? What's their kind of views on that?
No, I mean, the fan base is always going to be slightly split on those kind of things. There's never one unity for all the fans. But I think generally speaking, one of the things that changed when, you know, Chucky talking about Stuart Webber, I think that was a pivotal moment for us, because the narrative changed within the club, the transparency changed within the club, the fact that they were talking about the vision of what they're trying to do, talking about how we're going to be a sustainable club, talking about how we're going to try and achieve these things. We got on board with it. We understood what the model was. We understood what was needed. I mean, Maddison was key for us. We were paying for the sins of our past. When we had three seasons in the Premier League, we thought we were doing all right. We spent money. We bought Naismith, you know, 28 years old. I think he was 29 years old for 8 million.
They paid quite a bit of money for him, didn't you, as well?
Yeah, in the January transfer window to try and keep us up. We spent big on Ricky van Wolfswinkel, Feed the Wolf. That, you know, scored one goal for us in the entire season. We made some mistakes that season. We signed these people on long-term contracts, big money. Naismith was on a lot of money. I can't. Not sure exactly how much it was, but But I mean, we're talking like, you know, proper decent Premier League wages without the, I believe, allegedly, I don't think there was even a kind of reduction in his wages when for relegation clause. I mean, we were really? Third season in the Premier League, trying to push forward. Suddenly it all went wrong. And we were in a bad, bad way. You know, we had these huge wages on the bill. We had dropped out from the top flight, banking on staying there and building on the future. Mm. And actually selling Maddison pretty much saved our club. We were close to administration at that point. So his sale was like, I mean, no one wanted to see him leave because he played great football. But everyone knew what a huge, huge relief that was for us as a club. Because it kind of safeguarded us and it was able to help us push on. And then the further sales, you know, the Murphy twins, wow. I mean, great, 20 million for those two. And I think Jacob Murphy's just been released and is looking for a club now and he's 28. And
Cardiff,
So, you know, Jamal Lewis playing for Newcastle, Ben Godfrey, we talked about, Buendia. You know, the list is getting longer and longer.
Obviously, this last season was a nightmare for you. You know, finishing bottom of the Premiership and not being able to score goals and letting lots of goals in. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do you see the benefit of being in the Prem and what you've said there? Do you think that you're just going to bounce straight back up next season? Or do you think since you've been in the Prem, the Championship seems to have progressed to be quite a competitive arena now?
I think the Championship's been a very competitive arena for a decade or more. I think it's very, very good, a very, very strong league and very hard to get out of. I think we've got a real challenge this time round. We bought players that we were, it's trying to find value. We've looked at different marketplaces to try and find value in the players where, you know, you can't just keep going and thinking, well, we'll get this, like you were saying, Kev, 28-year-old, that's going to do the business. You can't do that. It's too big a risk. We tried it with Naismith. We don't want to do that again. So we're looking at Buendia was like, you know, for example, he was a little out of shape. He was playing in the second league in Spain. He wasn't necessarily on anyone's radar, but we saw potential. So we're trying to get potential. Rashista, you know, and Sargent, we saw potential.
Pukki's a prime example, isn't he?
Sorry?
Pukki's a prime example. Again, going overseas. Yeah.
Free transfer. He was the probably signing of Norwich's history. You know, really cool. Potential. So it's almost taking these punts. I think now we've come back down with a team that is used to losing. It's always going to be hard to regroup and remodel yourself again.
But I guess you've got a parachute payment. So I mean, you've had that a few times, haven't you? Has that helped a lot in the rebuilding program and trying to get them back up and challenging for the Premiership?
It gives you a year of trying to get your club in order, doesn't it? You know, and reorder. So inevitably, you're going to look at potential outgoings. I think Max Aarons has served his time with us very, very well at the moment. He's been very patient. We've had Barcelona came in and looking for him at one point. You know, Liverpool talking about making an offer.
Can you see him going, Steve? I mean, we talked about resale value, didn't we? Earlier, we spoke to Kevin as well. I mean, can you see anyone in that Norwich team that looked likely to move on this season in order to kind of give you the extra budget you need in order to make
I think Max Aarons is the prime example of that. I think he's the one that needs to now. He served his time. He's a good player. He can kick on in his career. I think one thing Norwich needs to do and has been doing is letting players go.
Yeah.
And it's good for the club to do that because if you're – say you've got this nice new – shiny building with you're trying to attract the best players in. What better way to attract players in than showing them that they've got the potential to A, get in your first team in play, and B, be allowed to move to a bigger team when that team comes calling.
Mm. So, well, I know how difficult it is for the academy because there's a ruling, isn't there, that you've got to live, I believe it's like 1 hour away from the training facility. So you look at where Millwall are, any London club, really, you're in a prime location because you're looking at an hour radius, north, south, east or west. You can really take your pickings. And unfortunately, when you look at Norwich, you look at Brighton to a point because you're only kind of looking at half of what's up now. If you look at Brighton, you can only look at half of the radius. You can't go into the English Channel, can you? You can't find any gems. And what I hear quite a lot of, and I think Norwich do this very, very well, is that they'll actually move families across to Norwich, buy them a house you know, buying them, you know, for the family and the kids, just so they're a resident in that 1 hour radius in order to sign that player. I mean, that's a massive outlay. I mean, to buy a house for a family and move them from wherever they live in the country to Norwich, just in hope that their kid becomes the next best thing one day. I mean, yeah, you've got to admire the balls, you know, for them to sort of put the money where the mouth is and actually take those chances, those gambles, in order to attract the best players. And they're working so hard in their academy.
Also,
and Brighton the same, you know.
Big commitment from the parents as well to have to pack up everything and move to Norwich, because, you know, not many people want to do that.
No, but I mean, now more than ever they are, because they see that their kids are getting into the first team setup. They're being given the opportunities. Now we're a destination where youth players actually look at and say, yes, please. Firstly, we've got the nice new training facilities that are outstanding. But most importantly, we've got a route path to the first team. We've got an opportunity to actually prove your talents if you're good enough and be allowed to move on to a bigger team when they come calling. We've got that proven track record of developing the talent, and that in itself almost is a calling card now, isn't it?
You see, that's where you boys at Brighton have done well, because you used to have Mark Beard, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
It was phenomenal for you. I mean, he's at Dorking now, I think. But he was phenomenal for you. And he done wonders with your kids, didn't he?
Yeah, we did. He did, and again, you could argue a lot of where we are now is thanks to the likes of Mark, and we had some really good people in the background there. Not only on the academy level, but on the scouting level as well. Scouting, obviously, the next best thing, but also current players. I mean, Steve alluded to it there. We often went to the Spanish league ourselves. To the second tiers. I think Ujel was second tier at the time when we brought him in. We had David Lopez come in as well. But you need a good scouting network. You have to have that. And you need a bit of luck. Brighton signed, you know, three or four turkeys. I mean, under normal circumstances, we would have gone under. But, you know, we signed Ali Hankabash. We signed Jürgen Lacardia. Don't get me started on Jürgen Lacardia. We signed Florin Andoni. You know, we signed some players that just, we're probably totaling about 50 million here that were awful. But fortunately, with the chairman's money, we could just about swallow that. And of course, we did sell some players for big money as well. Ben White, obviously, recently 50 million.
And Jurij Skalak to
Jurij Skalak. Yeah, cheese. It was the haircut. It was the dodgy hairstyle he had. It was frightening all the kids.
It was the money he was on what was scary. There was rumoured to be on about £15,000 a week for us, and he weren't even fucking playing.
He hardly ever played for us. It's a shame because, I mean, That season when Brighton got promoted and Jurij Skalak was playing, he was quite a good player. I mean, he was getting a lot of assists and
ready
for you, weren't he?
He never really did it for us. He had a spell, I think, of maybe a dozen games. He hit one particularly brilliant free kick against who I can't remember. But he was very much a flash in the pan, unfortunately. And it was no surprise when, you know, he was loaned out to the Championship, and I don't know where he is now.
And as with Norwich, sorry, Kev, I mean, obviously, quite clearly, Norwich do give their youngsters a chance. They do give them first-team football and believe them in. And you can see a lot of players have developed there by playing first-team football and moved on, and they've signed for lots of money. Are Brighton the same? I mean, Brighton got a fantastic academy. They've got some fantastic youngsters that are all going out on loan to every single team you can imagine at the moment. But how are Brighton as a club in regards to trusting their youth? Do they give them the chance to play? What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely they do. You only got to look at the subs bench now for a lot of Premier League games. Potter is putting youngsters on there. We have Tudor, I forget his surname now, I forgot his name, but we have players on there that are making the bench. And two or three of them have been given chances in the first team. One or two have been given a chance in the Premier League. So he is keen to do that. Obviously, when you have a little bit of wiggle room, you know, when you're safe, we were safe, I think, with four or five, maybe even six games to go, you can start to bring those players in and give them a chance. Although that's not to say that, you know, we weren't taking the Premier League any more less seriously. You know, the higher you finish, the more money you get. But he was certainly giving those youngsters a chance. Gives a lot of them a chance in the... as I say, I think most teams probably do in the League Cup and the FA Cup. But certainly, yes, they are played. There is, and I think you need to demonstrate to your existing academy players that there is a path to the first team. and the Premier League and maybe the riches beyond. And I think, again, if you can demonstrate that you are prepared to promote players rapidly up through the ranks into the first team, it's only a good thing. It's very attractive to a youngster that's trying.
It's interesting to say that. I mean, in our last show, Mickey, myself, and Chris, we were talking about, you know, the attraction for youngsters and their parents. Let's get it right. The parents have a big say where the kids play, and you know, if you've got, you know, three teams, let's say, or four teams in for you. You've got a Chelsea, a Man City, or a Brighton, a Norwich, or a Millwall, or an AFC Wimbledon. You know, where, and they all want you. Where do you go? You know, do you look at the best chance of playing first team football, i.e., you'll go for Millwall, you might go for AFC Wimbledon, or do you look at the best team that's available, if it's Chelsea or Man City, but then there's a little chance that you'll get into the first team? I mean, sometimes I think looking at Brighton or Norwich, especially where they've got proven history in allowing their youngsters to get first team football and at the same time having a Category 1 training facility, you kind of tick all the boxes. I mean, that's probably a massive coup for you guys in regards to attracting, you know, good players, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. But it's all the ingredients, isn't it? It's everything. It's who's advising you in the background. It's the, as we said, again, it's how the look of the academy. It's a whole raft of things. I mean, you know, it's talking to the youth coaches. I mean, I I've never been down this right route, unfortunately. I know it's surprising, but you just get a feel, I think, for a place when you go somewhere, and it's who you talk to and how you're advised.
Do you think with being in the Premiership that the commercial benefits of what the Premiership brings you opens up, that it's not just your chairman ploughing money into the club, you're potentially going to have large corporate partners like you've got American Express, you probably paid a big chunk towards that stadium and possibly keep paying a big chunk every year towards Brighton. I mean, I'd say we're slowly getting there on a commercial level, but I'd say that we're probably still possibly 10 years behind maybe where Norwich is.
Yeah, there's no doubt that success breeds success. You know, the more attractive you are as a marketing tool, then of course you are, that the more sponsorship you can command. I mean, American Express obviously are huge sponsors. They're headquartered in Brighton, so it's a nice fit. And yes, they do pump an awful lot of money into the stadium. I don't think they had any contribution to the cost of the stadium because the naming rights weren't awarded until after the stadium was built. But yes, it would have been a huge amount of money. And you're right, Mickey. I mean, the Premier League is an absolute goldmine. If you can stay there and establish yourself as a team, it is a goldmine for all that sort of corporate and sponsorship activity. And I think this was always Tony Bloom's vision. And fair play, he's carried it out almost to the letter. Was to get up there, stay up, consolidate, and then eventually try and finish in the top half of the season. Now, if you told me that's going to happen within 5 years, like it has, I'd have bitten your arm off. And it has happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any Brighton fan will tell you that they're absolutely cock-a-hoop with a ninth place finish this season. So it's the longer you stay, the richer you're going to get. It's as simple as that.
Question for both of you. Possibly Norwich, and possibly to both of you, you're not world-class as hardcore fans to a degree. And that's not disrespectful. That's just the way it is. Different to how we were and how other clubs around us, you know, like the Man United hardcore, the Liverpools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the Everton's, et cetera. But do you see the Premiership as a sanitation towards traditional football fan values? And does that weigh out for the commercial benefit, or does it ruin the football day experience for the traditional fan?
I mean, it's a question I've kind of asked myself a fair bit during the course of this season, as I'm sure you can appreciate, as yet another goal slips into to our net and we're losing heavily again, thinking, well, is it worth it? Is it worth it? Because it's all money. The Premiership is all about money. You know, it's definitely a billionaire's playground. it's very glamorous. It's made to be glamorous, and it's almost made to be like. I almost got the impression that people didn't like the way that Norwich were going about our business. Like, take like two seasons ago when we didn't spend any money coming up. We actually spent money on the infrastructure, the training grounds, improving the background. So we had something that lasted more than the season, even if we got relegated. And we got a lot of stick for not spending the money there. I think everyone wants the Premier League to be the biggest thing that you must, you know, you'll throw everything at it. You're going to get 120 million or 100 million pounds in revenue coming in for being in the Premier. You need to spend 100 million on players to try and keep yourself up there, right? And you need to die for that. That must be everything. But actually, there's great football being played in the Championship. Yes, there isn't the money, but you could argue exactly that it's a better footballing experience. You can actually have that. And I'm not saying you can't have that in the Premiership. That's unfair. But, you know, why does it have to be all about the money? Why can't it actually be about still getting behind the team? There was a poll done recently within Norwich, and I can't remember if it's 100 or 1,000 fans that took part in it, but a good portion of fans. What's more important, winning or playing attractive football? And the majority said winning. And I just kind of think, well, isn't that indicative of what we've been made to kind of view, like attaining the Premiership status, keeping that Premiership status, rather than actually enjoying the football? I don't know about, you know, you guys, but when I think of my favourite, like, you know, games in history, we've had some great games where we lost one against Millwall, where you know, it was a very, very high scoring game, which, you know, we just about won. I think it was 4-3. And again, we lost to Liverpool 5-4. You know, that was one of the best games that I've ever viewed, and we ended up losing it. So I think the Premiership's all about money. It's all about winning, and I don't adhere to that now. Maybe I'd like to be in the Championship for a couple of seasons and enjoy watching games where we can win some.
Your seasons are quite bipolar, aren't they? In the sense that you have one season when you're in the Championship, you're absolutely rocking and rolling. You're beating every team, you're playing great football, you're winning most of your games, and then the season after you're struggling and it's depressing, you're losing games, you're looking at relegation, and the next year you go back up again. It must be so hard to kind of for your emotions, you know, to kind of, you know, to take it all in really each time. I mean,
that's what makes it great to watch, doesn't it?
I mean, he's like coming by bipolar order.
But then you want to do the kind of the Brighton thing, don't you? You want to kind of go up and kind of stay up if you can. Now, the difference is between you two. I mean, we are probably much more closer, Millwall, that is, to Norwich than we are Brighton, because we haven't got someone who's going to chuck £250 million into our club. The only way we can do it really is by shrewd recruitment and getting our academy right. But what Kev's told us and what Brighton's done, it's quite clear to see you need to have money, but what's important is getting the infrastructure right. And Brighton done that very, very well. They've looked at everything, you know, from their training, their academy, their scouting. Everything's done well. Yeah, even their ground, you know, the way they built a new stadium there as well. So everything's done well, and they've planned very, very well for this to give them this sustainable club and team to kind of be playing the Premiership and not looking over their shoulder at relegation every season, you know?
Yeah. Sorry, Joe, go on.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, that's how, in my mind, I think that's the way to do it. But you do it on a shoestring budget like Norwich have done, and kind of almost, you know, work their way through the system, which is pretty close to what Millwall would do. And you just can't see how you're going to keep that going and be in a Premiership every season and not, you know, what relegation every year.
Well, I think, I mean, obviously, Mickey, your question at the top there about does the Premier League sanitise football? I absolutely does. There's no two ways about it. It's unrecognisable from playing in the lower leagues. And I think, Steve, you make an excellent point as well. The Championship is a brilliant league to play in, especially when you're going well with it. I mean, it was the seasons we had where we were getting into the playoff finals or getting into the playoffs, and we lost three playoff finals. But those seasons were so exciting. You get into the Premier League, and when you're a Brighton or a Norwich or whoever outside the Big Six, there's a glass ceiling. You are never going to win. Leicester aside, obviously, was a free occurrence.
Yeah.
You're never going to win the. We're not going to win the Premier League. We're never going to get into the Champions League. Let's be honest. The Europa League is obviously a distinct possibility now, but that is it. That is the glass ceiling. You cannot go any further than that. Is that the way you want to watch football, by aspiring to finishing seventh or eighth every year, or even just staying up?
It must be difficult for both of you, because for you and for Norwich, you know, even Brighton have done very, very well, and they've messed that up and they finished at a good position. You must look at the start of every season thinking, we must not get beat. We must not lose. You know, it can't be much fun. Yeah, you know, it can't be good for the old ticker. Every game you're going into thinking, we can't lose this game. We're playing Chelsea. Yeah. We can't lose this game against Liverpool. And it's great to watch them. And I wonder, as a Millwall fan, would I enjoy being in the Premier League, knowing damn well if we went up, we'll get absolutely spanked, probably finish worse than Norwich did this season. That could be possible. But that's what's going to happen. And in my head, you know, if I got the opportunity to do that, I would take it with both hands just to see Millwall play in the Premiership. But to do that every season, to go up, now you're going to get spanked to go down again, it's demoralising. I agree with what Steve's saying. I think to be in the Championship, it's a great division. It's probably where the Premiership was 10, 15 years ago, to be fair. You know, and both you guys, you've played in League One. You know, you've seen it out in league lower divisions. How shit and horrible it is down there. Millwall to be in the Championship, and we've been there for, this will be our sixth season now in the Championship. I love it. You know, I really do. As much as I want to go to the Premiership, I'll take the Championship. You know,
I'd like to go to the Premiership for one season, just to turn this golden brand on its head for one season. The fact that if we got into playoffs and it looked like we were going to win, the FA, the Premier League, the EFL would be having fucking kittens. They would be shitting it. The UK police force of the country would be absolutely shitting a brick. We would have more Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday kickoffs than any team's ever seen in the Premiership. I think it would shake it up, because we are a traditional working men's club. We're not changing. As much as they're trying to change us, I don't think we will ever change. Maybe 30, 40 years' time, when a lot of the Millwall fans from now, the historic Millwall fans, start obviously sadly dying, getting too old to go, et cetera, and this new youth, this new modern-day football fan, which is very different to what I would class a traditional football fan, maybe then things will change. But while we have still got air in my lungs, my legs still work, I don't think, as a Millwall fan, we can allow it to change. And that's not thuggery. That's not saying, oh, look who we are. We are the last bastions of keeping proper football supporting alive. And I'm not on about the violent side or the, you know, that side. I'm on about, we support the team with, you know, without the prawn sandwiches. We get behind the team. We travel
this room, isn't it?
We travel up and down the UK, you know, on a Tuesday night to fucking Hull, to Middlesbrough, wherever it is. We might not take, you know, 20,000, but we take 500 hardcore, what can make the sound of 20,000. And I'm just afraid that, you know, yes, I'd like to go to Premiership for one season, make a lot of money, and that would set us up probably for the next 20 years, 20, 30 years, rather than, you know, go get spanked by Man City every, you know, twice a season, the likes of Liverpool, Man United, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, we can take on the big boys when they come to the Den in the FA Cup. And then, you know, like Brighton, when they come, a keeper allegedly who decided to throw the fucking ball in the back of the net. But other than that, you know, we were doing okay.
That was brilliant. That was. Mickey, I see where you're coming from. I think, though, I mean, you look, we all watch our team and we all want our team to win. And why do we want our team to win? Because we want them to progress up the league. And that invariably means getting promoted. Now, of course, you want to get into the Premier League. It is the promised land. You can get up into that Premier League. I don't care if you're a Millwall or a Norwich or a Brighton. You could stay there. You can do it.
Bournemouth.
I mean, who would have thought Bournemouth would be an established... I know they're not now, obviously, they've gone back up. But, you know, they were established. They lasted four or five seasons.
That's right.
And once you it's like you get
a small stadium.
And once you get the taste of it, you want more. We all aspire to see our team do better and better. And that means you have to say you have to get into the Premier League. I mean, we used to get asked this every time Brighton lost the playoffs. It's like, well, at least you've got another season in the Championship. Or people used to say, is it too soon to go up? Which I think is a ridiculous thing to say. Of course, it's not too soon. Do you want to get in the Premier League? Yes, of course you do. You want to compete against the big boys. Because I'll tell you now, United or a Spurs or whatever coming to the new den, they're not going to like it, you know. No. And that makes for a great spectacle.
And I've seen the Millway changing rooms, and trust me, it's not nice. I mean, it's tiny. You know, it's not going to be one of the fixtures that they're going to be looking forward to. Let's put it like that way.
You look at the taxpayer funded stadium at West Ham. You're miles away from the pitch. It's a commercial entity. You're miles away from the pitch. You come to the Den. You know, pretty much. You could take a bottle of Coke or you could take a cup of tea out of someone's hand. You're that close to the fan base and have a swig of it that for the likes of some of these Premiership prima donnas, it's a scary environment. You know, being called a cunt by a sandwich brigade ain't that bad. When you're suddenly called a cunt from someone from Southeast London with a proper Cockney accent, with a bit of passion behind it, it's, you know, it don't matter if you're on fucking 60, 70 grand a week. It's going to unsettle you, as Ben Chigwell found out, you know, and others have found out. I think, you know, we're looking at pulling this to an end to a degree. And I think we need to do this again at some point because there's a lot more questions and bits and pieces going. But, I mean, you're obviously... this season, back in the Championship, Norwich, Steve. Are you fearful of that, coming back down to potentially what talent is in the... Seeing last season's Championship going down to pretty much the last day, are you fearful that potentially you it's going to be a lot harder to bounce back up than what it was maybe a couple of seasons ago?
I think it will be incredibly hard. I don't necessarily know if we'll do it, but it's not something that I fear. I don't fear being in the Championship. What I fear is, you know, what's happened to so many clubs like that have put too much on the line to try and stay in the Premier League and failed. You know, the lower leagues are littered with examples of clubs that have given too much of it a go to do everything they can to stay there and have ruined their clubs in the process.
Sunderland, Portsmouth,
there's so many. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
And hopefully not Burnley now as well in the situation they've got with the investors.
Well, they're in real financial sort of...
Well, they are. I don't fear being in the Championship. I don't fear playing Championship football. I like playing Championship football. I think it's a great league. What I fear is my club putting everything on the line and losing and not having a club anymore or it being in League One, League Two, because we try too hard. And if we're in the Championship for 5 to 10 years, that's fine. I'll embrace that.
Yeah. And that's why we aspire to the Premier League again. Mickey, you said you want to see Millwall in the Premier League for one season to give you that long-term financial stability. It doesn't matter if you go down. And I think you're right. I'm like Steve, who's having seen Brighton go through hell 25 years ago. You do want that long-term financial stability and that safety net that if you do go down, if you do tumble down a couple of leagues, you're still financially secure.
Realistically, and it's a question quickly to both of you, where do you see your clubs in 5 years' time? I mean, we all wish and hope where we would be, but where do you honestly see your clubs in 5 years' time? Steve.
It's hard to see past where we are at the moment, you know, somewhere in the in-between ether, you know, somewhere in the top 26 of England, you know, maybe.
Do you not see any progression for where you are at the moment? Do you not see yourself or do you see yourself going the way?
I think without genuine investment, it's going to be really hard to become a club that stays in the Premier League long term. I think, you know, as for all this talk about being a sustainable club, for all the fact that I'm behind that and want that, it is so difficult to do. It doesn't mean it can't be done, and teams go up and do well. Look at how well Brentford have done over this last season. Mm. Fantastic recruitment has caused them to, you know, take the Premiership by storm. I also partly think because they're playing without the kind of, I don't know, shackles of too many failed Premiership attempts in the past that kind of plays on the mind of us. But
would you think Delia and her husband are sort of holding Norwich back in some way then? I mean, obviously they've got this affiliation with Norwich. They love Norwich and, you know, the fans love them as well. But do you almost feel that, you know, they're going to probably be the part of you not moving to that next level, getting a real big chairman in there, lots of money to really invest in the club team to the next level, as sort of where Brighton have kind of moved to?
I think Norwich fans are fairly divided on that fact. You know, some want to see that investment. They think Delia and Michael have taken the club as far as they can. They should be looking to offload. It's someone that's got that investment to put in. And everyone else is absolutely, you know, fine with where we are, comfortable with the fact that they've got the best interest of the club at heart. And it goes what Kev said earlier about culture and having the best interest of the club at heart. What I don't want to do is sell to an investor that doesn't have, you know, a Glazer of the world or what's happened to Burnley with the consortium that have taken that over and saddled it with debt to be able to do so. That's my idea of a horror show with promises of all this gold. I don't want that. If someone has a genuine interest in our club, in the family nature of the club and keeping the ethos the same, but wants to try and take it forward, that's great. But how attractive a prospect is Norwich compared to, you know, a lot of London clubs or other clubs in the country that, you know, let's face it, are more fashionable than Norwich City. Yeah. So,
it's a very honest answer, and I completely get you. And that, again, both you and Brighton are very, very similar in that, you know, your owners care about the club, yeah, massively. You can see the decisions they've made have been great. Very quickly, Kev, just to answer that last question, when do you see yourself Brighton in 5 years' time?
It is a quick answer because, of course, in Brighton's case, it's a very easy question to answer. It's just whether that answer's right. And obviously, I think any Brighton fan or any neutral would say Brighton will be an established Premier League team. But 5 years is a huge amount of time in football. Mm. It really, anything can happen. You buy a couple of, you know, signings that don't work out and that financially hits you, or anything can happen. So yes, I would like to see us as an established team, potentially challenging for Europa places, but equally we could be in the Championship. You just don't know.
Well, I mean, the fixtures on the Premiership have been leaked to a degree. And the early indication is that allegedly you're at home on your first game against Arsenal and you're at home on your last game against Liverpool.
Really? Seriously?
Seriously, yeah.
They're coming out on Thursday, aren't they?
Yeah. I've got the Daily Mail's got them now.
Oh, wow. Oh, right. Interesting. Okay. We'll see if that materialises. Yeah, well, I mean, that's a tough start and a tough end. But, I mean, we've beaten these teams before. We do actually better than against those teams, and generally we do against the Norwiches. I think it's two draws this season and the Burnleys of the world. So, whatever will be.
Yeah. It'll be good to get you boys back at some point and maybe do a round table or something with some other football fans and just do there. Joe, thank you as always, fella.
My pleasure enjoying it.
Anything you want to say before we go?
I just want to thank the lads for coming on. I thought they've done fantastically well. I know neither of them have done many kind of podcasts or shows. So for this being that their first one, I think they've done fantastically well. Thanks to Kevin and Steve. Obviously, Brighton, we should mention as well, they've got affiliation with Millwall, as we both, in agreement, we both hate Palace, don't we? For different reasons.
We had your young kid who came to us for a bit, didn't he? And then we couldn't buy him. Malumboy?
Yeah,
we had him. And obviously, you've had Beard, who was your youth guy there and whatnot. And some other bits of base. Steve Cottle was here and there. So, look, it is what it is. But no, I agree with what Jay said. Look, Steve, thanks very much for joining us. I hope that, you know, Norwich has a great season and we take 6 points off them this year.
Ditto, yeah.
And Steve, thank you very much for breaking your cherry with us. And Kev, thanks again for again breaking the cherry with us rather than, you know, your own podcast people. But hopefully they'll listen to this and go, oh, we're getting on our show now. So fingers crossed it'll go from there. So yeah, thanks very much, gents, for joining us. But that's it. That's the end of our chat. Just sort of an interesting side angle, really, during closed season, just to see the amount of effort, really, what goes into the Championship. After our show last week, we have been approached by a Premiership scout, which we are trying to organise to do a show with, which could be an interesting show, talking to us about, you know, youth setup and scouting players and the effort and everything else what goes into that. So that could be an interesting show coming forward. But again, look, you know, we are that Millwall podcast. Follow us across social media. You can check us out across all the name media in all our channels at the bio. We've got a link there and you can check out the latest shows across YouTube and across our podcast. But remember, if you do check us out on YouTube, please make sure to subscribe. It means nothing to you, but it means the absolute world to us and helps us get out in front of more people. So that's it for another week and we will see you again shortly. Stay tuned and we'll speak to you soon. See you later.